Howdy, folks. Welcome to another episode of Tarot Talk on Woodwos Radio. This is your host, Brian. We're here with Joy again.
Hey, everybody.
It's the second last episode of Tarot Talk. We decided to try something else on Monday nights. So, you know, a couple of weeks from now, we've got a new show starting.
Yes, we do. Just to let you guys know, Tarot Talk probably could have lasted for a lot longer, but to be honest, it's a finite amount of information that can be shared. I mean, we can talk to you about the tarot cards and about the layouts and about how to interpret them, but tarot really is about an interaction between the person that's getting the reading and the person that's doing the reading. And without that interaction, it's pretty much intellectual, I want to say a very nasty word right here, but I'm not going to. It's a lot of work with very, very little return. So since we've gone over the cards and we've gone over the readings, and since there is not a lot more that we can talk about on our own with this, Brian and I decided that we were going to end Tarot Talk as it is, and do what we do best, which is the segue of discussion of anything and everything. So this is the next to the last show. Next week, we're going to be doing pretty much an overview recap of the whole tarot deck and the readings. And you can go back and actually listen to the various other shows if you want to get more details on those specific cards. And then the week after, we're going to migrate into a thing called Magic Mondays, in which we talk about various aspects of paganism, Wicca, magic, astral projection, meditation, anything and everything that touches on metaphysics and the occult. It's not going to be one where we go in and say, okay, this is what the Temple of Het does in their secret ceremonies that they don't tell you about, because obviously we're not initiates of it. It's going to be very, very heavy on theory, which is something that a lot of groups don't give anymore. And that's the theory behind why you do the ritual. Instead of just doing the ritual, they say, okay, do this, that, and the other, and here's what is happening, and you're going to get this result. Well, that's great, except when you remove it from the ritual trappings, you don't have any basis of being able to use those elements that actually work without the ritual. And so we're going to focus more on the theory behind the ritual and the reasons that you do thus and so to get this to work. So for tonight, we're going to do the relationship readings that we promised you 2 weeks ago. And as promised, I sat down and found several readings online that I thought were fairly good. And tonight I spent 5 minutes and came up with my own relationship reading, which I think pretty much incorporates a lot of those elements. Once again, it's the theory behind everything. What you want is you want something that is talking about the querent and their attitude towards the relationship. You want something, some section that is talking about the significant other, which is my politically correct way of saying the other person in the relationship. Could be male, female, could be, any number of things. So we're just going to use a global term and say significant other. And how they see the relationship. And then you need a section that's talking about the interaction between the two in the actual relationship. A lot of the relationship readings that I've seen have, you know, 3, 4, 5, 8, 10 cards dealing with one person, the same amount dealing with the other person, and then 5, 6, 7 cards, 1, 2, 3 cards even, that are dealing with the interaction between the two. The relationship reading that I came up with is a 13-card reading, and it's a very easy one that if you've been listening to the shows, you'll be able to pick up on really quickly, because it's 2 5-card readings and then a 3-card reading. It's 5 cards for the questioner, 5 cards for the significant other, and then 3 cards in the interaction between them. Okay. So as always, we're using
Robin Wood
deck. I can't talk tonight. I don't know what's going on. And the way that I set it up is the 5-card reading that's closest to you is about the person that's asking about the relationship. The 5-card reading that is furthest away from you in the north is about the significant other, and the 3 cards in the middle is about the interplay between the relationships, okay? So right now I just laid out one of these readings. I've got in the other person's reading, the Devil, the 2 of Pentacles, the 4 of Cups, the 7 of Pentacles, and the 6 of Pentacles, okay? In the 5-card reading about the Querent, I've got the World, the Hanged Man, the Chariot, the 3 of Pentacles, and the Page of Pentacles. And the 3-card reading in between the two of them, I've got the 8 of Wands, the 7 of Cups, and the 8 of Swords.
Huh.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah, this is the focus on, if this were a real meeting, reading, the focus is really on finances right now. But I think the two people are having very strained relationships because they're on 2 different pages. But anyway, we're going to interpret it all, and I'm going to explain the interpretation in just a bit. Once again, in the significant other's reading, we've got the Devil with 2 of Pentacles, the 4 of Cups, the 7 of Pentacles, and the 6 of Pentacles. In the Querent's reading, we've got the World, we've got the Hanged Man, we've got the Chariot, we've got the 3 of Pentacles, and we've got the Page of Pentacles. And in the Interplay section, we've got the 8 of Wands, the 7 of Cups, and the 8 of Swords. So, Brian, if you would put on something for them to listen to while they find these cards, we'll be back in about 4 minutes.
Alrighty, folks. Let's go with Isaac Bonowitz, Witch of the West.
Fly free, a good gray hawk, to gather the golden rod. the form of a maiden fair with a jet black mare's body. Now round, long, and truly blue, and she was by his side. High overhead, gray hawk flew, and swiftly he did ride. Hey, horse, well, my brindle cow, and fetch me the jet black mare. Stoop and strike my good gray hawk, and bring me the maiden fair.
Hi, folks. Welcome back. Woodrose Radio. Hopefully, you've got your cards out. You pulled out the appropriate cards for each portion of the reading so that we can discuss them.
Yeah, and Brian and I have been talking while the music was going. This is a really, really interesting reading because this shows a typical dominant and submissive split that you would see in most 50s types of relationships. Up top in the significant others reading, we've got pentacles everywhere, which usually means money. We've got somebody that's bound to the physical, which is also money, and somebody that is making a choice between what they have and what they could have. Okay. That's what the five cards are talking about. The devil, as we know, is bondage to the material. The two of pentacles is the walking the tightrope while juggling the two pentacles. The four of cups we talked about. The seven of pentacles is the waiting for the harvest. Okay, all the seeds have been sown, everything's grown up, and now they're waiting for it to come in. Six of Pentacles is the gentleman sharing his wealth with those that are asking for it. Now, it's not so important in this case what the individual cards mean so much as the overall between those five. And when I state, you know, that we've got Pentacles everywhere, we've got three cards that are Pentacles, and then we've got another card that's dealing with the material. Okay, so this is what the significant other is focused on, is the earthly plane, work, their source of income, and trying to provide now so that there is resources available in the future. Okay, and this is a really male 50s dad attitude. Okay, Mary was married before to another gentleman, and he always stated that his family came first. And she finally called him on it at one point because he wasn't there when their children were in the hospital because he was busy working. But in his mind, he was there for the family because he would work 90 hours a week to provide money for the family so that they could survive, so that they would have the things that they needed. He wasn't there emotionally. He wasn't there in the events in their life, but he was there for the family in that he's going to be a good provider, okay? And that's, you know, that was the attitude at the time. My father grew up with the same attitude. He worked two full-time jobs and another part-time job on the weekends, you know, providing for the family. And he didn't have a clue what we were going through or what we were doing in our life, and could have cared less about recitals and concerts and, you know, the pictures that I was taking for the school paper. But according to his mind, he was there for us because he was providing money. On the other hand, the person that's asking the questions about this relationship, their spread has a majority of Major Arcana cards in it. In fact, it is three-quarters of the Major Arcana cards that show up in this 13-card reading, which is a huge thing, okay? And once again, we're reading the totality of these five cards. I mean, the World, the Hanged Man, and the Chariot, one right after the other, then the Three of Pentacles, and then the Page of Pentacles, are also showing that, for lack of a better term, I'm going to call her she, okay, because this is a very feminine part of the reading at this point, very feminine feel. She is, you know, also concerned about money, but more along the lines of saving it, making sure that things are as they should be in the household, that what is there is what is needed as represented in the world. The Hanged Man is deferring to his, for the significant other, authority over her. And the Chariot is, she is going to, you know, make sure that the house is the way it should be, okay? And this is also a very 50s wifely feel to it, okay? He's concerned with money. She's concerned with domestic and the here and now of the family, okay? And she is trying to make sure that, you know, it is a good place, and she is, you know, submitting to his will, and she is trying to be supermom, because the world is very much about everything. And coming up in the first position in this, it's kind of significant in that that's the majority of the way she sees herself, as providing everything. All right, so we've got a very 50s male and a very 50s female. The interplay between the two of them is really, really odd, because you would think with this kind of dynamic that there would be a lot of peace, a lot of harmony. Instead, what we've got is we've got attention and emotional forces focused on other things outside of the relationship. We've got scattered dreams with no concrete plans to get there. And then we've got the Eight of Swords, which is all bound up and surrounded by swords and blindfolded while the tide's coming in, okay? So this is a really rocky road, mainly because neither of them are on the same page. One's working towards one thing and one's working towards another thing, and they're not communicating at all. So they're having conflicts, they're having problems, and they're not getting resolved because the people involved in the relationship are not talking. They're talking to other people, but they're not talking to each other, and they feel that they're trapped by this situation. Okay? Brian, your turn.
Yeah, that's actually sort of what I'm getting as well. And, I mean, looking at in the Significant Other's five-card spread, I'm looking at the Devil and the Two of Pentacles, and the sense that I have of the Devil card is kind of one of a self-imposed struggle, attachment to a situation that, you know, it's kind of like difficult, but it's so obvious and so easy to let go of if one only chooses. And I'm getting the sense in this case, because of, you know, we're speaking in a rhetorical sense of a 50s type male, of a workaholic. You know, he's fixated on the work, but it's a matter of his own choice to do this. Like,
yeah,
he could easily just let go of it.
Yeah, and another thing that, yeah, you reminded me of is that, yes, this is a situation of his own choosing. And it's, he thinks that this is the role that he should be playing.
Yeah, for
and,
sure.
Yeah, and she thinks that this is the role that she should be playing because that's what he wants. And so neither of them are happy, you know.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
She's like Rosie the Riveter, but, you know, she's still the aspiring Riveter. She's stuck in the old social custom of being the housewife who has these aspirations to, you know, education and employment, and she just is worried that the husband is not going to let her do that because of that mindset that he has of his being provider, you know, his being the head of the household. And I think, again, I mean, when you look at the Four of Cups, you're dealing with this mindset where he's thinking about all these things that he wants to be providing, but, you know, it's what he's not paying attention to is the fact that things aren't under control right now. Like, he's losing grip on what is for what he wishes was.
There is that, yeah. So, but like I was saying, the in cases like this, with these types of readings, it is more about the sense of the whole rather than the individual cards, okay? And in a lot of the sets that we've shown and a lot of the readings, it's you interpret each of the cards and then read them all together. In this case, however, it's one of those where you have to take the sense of all the cards together. And when I first laid this out, it would look like a whole bunch of scattered cards, and then as I started looking at them and started getting a feel for what those five cards read together instead of the individual cards, it became really clear what was going on. So that's another one of those things that you have to learn, where when to stop looking at the individual cards and start reading, start looking at the whole, okay? And this is a pretty good opportunity because five-card readings normally, when it's just five cards, like I've said, it's either a timeline or it's a sum of the parts. And you don't have to read each individual card. You just look at all of them together. And this is a perfect opportunity to see that in action, the reading the whole. Now, could we, with this particular layout, look at it differently and look at the individual cards? Absolutely, we could if we wanted to. And when we break down and look at the individual cards, when we're talking about the section where he's dealing with, the Four of Cups stands out because it's the only one that's not talking about physical money or a bondage to the material or something like that. It shows that there is a choice there, and that it's a choice that he's having to make, or the significant other is having to make, almost on a daily basis between what they have and what they could have. And there's, you know, the conflict with the trying to juggle too many things at once. There's the conflict with feeling like they can only focus on the money situation, the here and now, the earthly situation, their home, their finances, the car, what they have, the providing. And then there's the, okay, we've got seven pentacles, and then right after that we've got six pentacles. That just jumped out at me, talking about, okay, he's got a crop of seven pentacles growing, and then in the very next card he's giving six of them away. He feels like he's spending more than, or spending almost everything they've got, and they've got very little for themselves. You're paying bills, the finances, the house, the car, the kids' teeth, the garden, the dog.
The credit cards and whatnot, yeah.
Yeah, all those little mundane bills that you've got that just drive you crazy. You know, so he's got very little that he can keep for himself. And then there's the next thing. Every single one of those cards in there, it's showing a man. Okay? Yes, the devil has a woman in it too, but every single one, everyone other than those is a single male in the card. Okay?
True.
So you've got that too, and that's why I say this is a very masculine male mindset when you're talking about it. The five cards for the questioner, the querent, you've got an androgynous woman, you've got a man hanging upside down, you've got an effeminate man in a chariot, you've got a master craftsman with a beard, old gentleman, and then you've got a young girl. Okay, so this is somebody that is used to also being in control, but also being enough of a feminine person that it's kind of up in the air as to what they are. They could be a gay male, it could be a butch female, or somebody that's just used to being in charge, okay? Or possibly even, you know, a female executive who has decided to give up the corner office and become a house mom. But
actually, I have this mental picture of a particular YouTuber in mind now, actually, that you said that. It's quite funny.
And I was thinking of the Nicole Kidman version of the Stepford Wives, where she's a high-powered network executive who just has a mental break, and so she's going to try to do the domestic thing, and she's making 800 cakes because she can, and she's trying.
That's a good movie, actually. I should see that again.
It's kind of funny. It's nowhere near the book. It's not as scary as the book. And it's a little scattered, but it's a decent movie. I liked it a lot.
Actually, yeah, now that we're talking about books that were made into movies, if you guys are fans of the original, the better, Wicker Man, it was actually, like, through a whole series of weird little kerfuffles, I guess you could call them, it was based on a book that's called Ritual, and the book is absolutely fascinating. Totally unlike what became The Wicker Man, but that's the book that it started with. And I don't know, if you're into, you know, books that became movies, I'd say read that one as well. We could go on with, like, pages of lists for books that, you know, are like that, mind you.
Oh, God, yes.
That's, but that's
the,
what we do.
Segue,
you guys know
stuff. But how is it related to tarot? Go ahead. Tell me.
Everything is related to tarot.
You started this, so tell me how.
In this case, well, because both books, The Stepford Wives and The Ritual, are dealing with occult and reading-related subject matter. We've got the Stepford Wives, which is talking about the ultimate housewife. That there relates to our reading right now. And Ritual, because You know, again, it deals with occult topics, and tarot is in itself an occult practice and study and interest. There you go. I've tied them
okay, both. So from this, listeners, we can tell that Brian is not very good about thinking on his feet. Because he basically said the same thing three times, just in different ways.
That's okay.
Anyway. We're gonna
you should see me present a workshop. I am awesome at that.
We're going to clear this reading because I think we've chewed it to the bone pretty much.
Pretty much, yes.
That's an example of how a relationship reading works. One half is for one person, one half is for another, and then there's the interplay between them. And that's the interplay is what you tend to what people tend to focus on, because that tells you what the relationship is like in actuality, rather than day to day what everybody sees and things like that. This is. Relationship readings should be about what is not visible on a daily basis, okay? For example, let's say that in that particular reading, the significant other is just going to work. They are, you know, doing what they're supposed to do. They're not really focusing on always working. But if this was, since this is what's going on behind the scenes in their mind, that is what they're obsessed with. They're obsessed with the bills. They're obsessed with the making money, and they're obsessed with, you know, balancing the time that they have for themselves and work. So this is where you want to try to look with a reading like this. What isn't shown? Because everybody can see, well, they're going to work. Well, duh, they get in the car and they drive to work every day. Of course they do. Well, they're obsessed about, they're making money. Okay, and they get a paycheck. You know, of course they make money. Hello. So you want to try to interpret these as things that the person doesn't know already. Okay, so I'm going to shuffle the deck again, and we're going to lay out another reading. And let's see, in this case, it's going to be another relationship reading.
Alrighty.
All right, so the 13 cards. In the significant other's area, we have the Emperor, followed by the Page of Pentacles, followed by the Fool, then the Lovers, and then the Queen of Pentacles. In the Querence side, we have the Devil. We have the Ace of Wands, we have the Nine of Cups, then the Page of Wands, and then the Eight of Pentacles. And in the relationship between them, we've got the Ace of Hearts, or the Ace of Cups, I'm sorry. The big heart in the middle just sort of jumped out at me. Then the Nine of Swords. Yeah. Playing cards are always wonderful. Okay, and the Ace of Cups, then the Nine of Swords, and then the Six of Cups. Okay. And once again, we're going to go through, I'm going to give it to you again. We have the Emperor, the Page of Pentacles, the Fool, the Lovers, and the Queen of Pentacles in the significant other's area. We have the Devil, we have the Ace of Wands, we have the Nine of Cups, the Page of Wands, and the Eight of Pentacles in the Querence side, and then the Ace of Cups, the Nine of Swords, and the Six of Cups. Okay, so we'll give you all some time to get those and pull them out.
All right.
And I don't
know. Something else to...
Or, you know, I don't know.
Do you want to banter about something?
like we don't do that enough.
Well, clearly, but that's beside the point. It's
you
all
know,
related.
I've never seen The Wicker Man. I've heard about it ever since I got into paganism. Never watched it.
It's a classic movie. Christopher Lee, the guy who played Saruman in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Not Saruman. Yeah, Saruman, the White Wizard.
Yeah.
Yeah. He actually played his role, Lord Summer Isle, for free because he liked the script so much.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and that made me respect him so much more because he says in the commentary, he normally would have been paid, the union wage or whatever, but that would have tripled the cost of the movie or something. And he just went, you know what? I like this script. I like where it can be going. So I will do this for free. Whereas they talked about, the chick who played, I want to say the barkeeper's daughter. And they talk about how she was just this horrible prima donna. And, they actually had a body double for her nude dance scenes in the movie. Because, I don't know why, I think it was because they didn't like the way she moved or because she just refused to, let it all hang out kind of thing for the pivotal scene where she's trying to seduce the cop. So, it's a fascinating, weird movie.
That sounds
and it was classic horror.
And that sounds a lot like what Robin Williams did with Aladdin. He went into it, he said that he wanted to have a movie, a feature film with him in it that his kids could watch. And so he did the voice of the genie for Aladdin for scale, which for somebody of his stature and his acting chops was unheard of. He would have gotten something along the lines of $50 million, $60 million or something had they negotiated, like they normally would have. But scale is, you're paid by the word, essentially. And it just reduces the cost massively. The thing was that they couldn't use his name in promoting the film to get people into, come watch Robin Williams do the genie and everything like that. And then Disney wound up breaking that agreement, and Robin said, well, up yours, and refused to do the voice of the genie on the second film, Aladdin film, which is why it didn't do quite as good.
I noted.
Oh, my goodness. That one, the story is okay, but the genie is really, really flat. And so Disney apologized and gave him a Picasso and a couple of other things in apology for doing that. And he came back and did the voice for the genie on Aladdin 3. And it was pretty cool. That one did all right, too. I
of
thought
course.
That was pretty cool. Yeah, he really makes those films. He really does.
Yeah, I can't imagine, the genie with any other voice. I think, if Morgan Freeman had done the genie for Aladdin, it would have been wait, what? What the hell is going on here?
It would have been a very different film. It would not
really
have been so manic. I don't know. Morgan Freeman as the genie would have been an interesting film, and it could have done really, really well. Anyhow, back to the tarot. Okay, hopefully by now you've gotten all the cards out and you've laid them out like this. Remember, we've got the Emperor, followed by the Page of Pentacles, and then the Fool, then the Lovers, and then the Queen of Pentacles in the Significant Others area. Then we've got the Devil, the Ace of Wands, the Nine of Cups, the Page of Wands, and the Eight of Pentacles in the Querence section. And then the Ace of Cups, the Nine of Swords, and the Six of Cups in the interaction. Okay, first thing that jumps out to me is that looking at the Significant Others area, we've got three more major arcana in there, and the two that aren't are Pentacles. So you've got the Page of Pentacles is a young girl, And then you've got the Queen of Pentacles, who's an older woman. So obviously this is about the female half of the group here. Even though the Emperor is there, this one would talk to me about a mom-type person, especially when you're dealing with the Emperor, who is a ruler in and of himself. And somebody that, you know, is still an innocent, probably a young bride type thing, or somebody that is not real experienced in relationships. But the Lovers is what really jumps out and grabs me on this one. This is somebody that, while they want a financially secure home and a financially secure future, they're more interested in a real partnership with whoever they're with. And between the Emperor and the Queen of Pentacles, they're trying real hard to have that, and they're willing to do what's necessary to get it. And I think that's really, really sweet. It's also really old-fashioned in a lot of ways. As for the Querent, we've got two wands, pentacles, cups, and bondage to the material with the devil again. So here we have somebody who is probably just starting out on their career. That's what I would think that this means. I mean, you've got the Eight of Pentacles, where it's the apprentice craftsman just starting out, and they're good at this, at what they do, and they know it, and they work hard at it. And they don't mind doing the same mindless routine every day because it is important. They are a little bit over-focused on the material world, but they are trying to get to the It's a Wonderful Life thing, where they have what they want. And with the Ace of Wands, the very, very phallic Ace of Wands, this is probably the guy in the relationship, the gentleman that is getting together with the lady on the other side. And that's, you know, that's neither here nor there. It's just one of those little things that kind of stick out. Oh, God, I can't believe this. Never mind.
And you know what? Interesting. I mean, it's totally unrelated. I mean, you know, it's related in its own way to the tarot. However, it occurs to me that the dynamic that we're describing here is kind of like the young Christian couple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely a young couple. I would say that this is a couple that either just started dating and are getting really serious about it, as in looking for getting engaged and getting married, or a set of newlyweds who are in their 20s. And just starting out. She's used to daddy providing and is looking to transit that over into a permanent relationship with somebody. He is used to being very concerned with where the income is at and the bills and, you know, taking care of. He's got goals and plans, but once again, no concrete way to get there. The interplay between the two of them I find really interesting, because you've got the Ace of Cups, which is the new love. You've got the Six of Cups, which is a friendship from the past. And then you've got the Nine of Swords, which is totally out of place here.
Yeah, it really is. I was just thinking, the card that stands out in that set of three is the Nine of Swords, the nightmare card.
Yeah, I mean, up all the Nine of Swords literally means up all night worrying. Okay, so you've got new love and you've got an old friendship and then up all night worrying, and it's like, what I think this is saying is that between the two of them, they've known each other for years. They recently discovered that they fell in love with each other. And now they're getting to the point where they're serious about the relationship, they're committing to each other, but they're scared of what's going to come up, and they're constantly worried about it. Okay.
Well,
given those three cards, that's, you know, the only interpretation I can give it. Go ahead.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, what I'm thinking here is that this is kind of a relationship between high school friends that blooms. And the thing that I would imagine, you know, would keep them up is kind of that concern with what's to become of the friendship. Like, what if things don't work out in the relationship? You know, it will destroy what we had.
Yeah, that's a good insight. That's probably exactly what would be going. Guys, tandem readings where you have two people that are doing the same reading for somebody are possible. They're very, very common. Mary and I do them all the time. You hear Brian and I doing it here. And this is not something that's bad. It's not something that's impossible. It's not cluttering up the energy. What it's doing is it's bringing aspects that one person might miss out and then letting the other person kind of segue off of that and get more definition to the reading. And they might mention something that the first reader then sees suddenly in the reading that will give them more depth. So, yeah, I was kind of in the back of my head thinking childhood friends, high school friends, and it blossomed out. And Brian is really right that, you know, they are probably concerned about what this is going to do to the, you know, friendship. And, you know, we've been together through thick and thin forever. And, you know, what's going to happen now? And that's very likely. So given this, I'd probably say somebody 17 to 19, just getting out of high school, future is wide open, and they're, you know, starting to try to commit to each other and thinking about marriage.
Yeah, so, and it does sort of make sense because, I mean, when you're dealing with, you know, the quote, male in the relationship, I mean, you're looking at materialism, and you know he's probably just kind of starting out in a career. He wants to like establish himself so that he can provide in this marriage, so that, you know, he's got something that, you know, his dad would be proud of, kind of deal.
And then she is focused on the romance as shown in the lovers, and making her family proud, you know, and getting that. He's typical male, he's focused on the money, she's focused on the relationship. You know, that's just absolutely typical. But there you go.
Well, and it's not really represented in the cards, but I'm imagining that this particular woman is kind of, you know, she's basically about to marry or has recently married the guy her parents loved. He was like that, you know, letter jock kind of guy, you know, but he was a really sweet sort of creative guy, you know, who actually had a future planned for himself, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, this is just me off in space creating a story around it. It's just...
That's great. And I threw out three more cards for her. I get the Queen of Cups, the Eight of Wands, and the Three of Wands. Three of Wands, ships came in. This is the goal. The Eight of Wands, energy and love and focus on other things, not necessarily reserved for you. And the Queen of Cups, very looking towards the future. So, yeah, that's a pretty accurate description for what you were saying, Brian.
Yeah, I was just thinking about those cards, too, actually. It does talk very much about, you know, the relationship progressing, you know, with all the sort of bases covered, things are happening, you know, everything is going well. Now I want to, you know, see extra cards for the husband in the relationship.
All right, extra cards for the husband. Seven of Swords, Three of Swords, and then the Knight of Cups.
Well, isn't that interesting? A hell of a lot of blades in this little threesome.
He's settling. He is settling for somebody because he doesn't think that he's worthy of more. The Seven of Swords is the thief sneaking off in the night with five swords and leaving two behind. The Three of Swords is the heartbreak. It's the heart with the three swords stuffed through it. And then the Knight of Cups, focused on emotions. So what I'm getting from this is that he had his heart massively broken in the past, and he is settling for what he has rather than actually being honest with himself. Now, it's a good settling for, but he sees it as, okay, this is, you know, what I deserve. This is what I can get.
It's kind of the safe choice for him, is what you're saying.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because, I mean, yeah, I could see the dynamic between that, actually. You know, you've got the daughter who has met this really sweet, you know, athletic guy that her parents are proud that she's met. And, you know, maybe he's had, like, a past where he's been kind of a... He's been known for his sexual conquests and just using, you know, girls. And, you know, the one time he fell in love, you know, he was just a tryst with, you know, for this one girl, and, you know, it broke his heart kind of thing. And he's just like, oh, I don't know if I can, you know, go for anything better. So now he's trying to settle for the sweet girl that, you know,
has always been there and he's actually really good friends with.
Yes. They've shared milkshakes.
And fries at Steak and Shake. Sorry, that's one of the stories that Mary loves to tell about me, is one of our first dates, when we went and saw a movie and then afterwards went to Steak and Shake and split a plate of fries and a milkshake, literally. And you know, two straws and the whole thing, sitting at the bar. She's just, oh, it was just so wonderful and romantic. And I'm like, oh, my God, kill me now, please.
And it was one of those, like, really old-fashioned style milkshakes, too, where they pulled out the ice cream and the milk in the blender and...
put the malt in and everything, yep.
Nice. And it was real strawberries that flavored that one. It wasn't
No, this was chocolate. This was chocolate.
Oh, good choice. Aphrodisiac. You don't want the strawberry. All right,
so.
Anyway.
Guest doesn't have any questions on this. I'm not seeing anything in my inbox from people that do have
Guest
questions.
Shy. I'm still trying to coax him to actually call in. 3903 is actually a friend of mine.
Ah, okay. So,
Larky
all right.
Poo.
I guess we're going to go to the segue segment of our show here in just a few moments. And since we're going to be doing that, Brian, do you have something to put on while we gather the cards up and clear them and then figure out what the heck we're not going to be talking about?
Sure. What the hell am I going to put on there? Not Beltane anymore. Oh, here's an annoying one. Let's go with this one.
Deep into the earth I go. Deep into the earth I know. Deep into the earth I go.
Oh,
Hi, folks. We're back. we haven't even decided what we wanted to talk about yet, because there's so many things that we could talk about at length, because you know how we are.
He'd sent me a message at one point about what we wanted to talk about, and I'm looking for that message because there were a couple of things that were on there. One was the Indigo Children, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago. And the other one, I don't remember what it was about. And I'm trying to find it, and I don't see it. I must have deleted it. Oh, well. Huh. I know part of it was the attitude that many pagans have these days of superiority in a lot of ways. And that was part of the Indigo Children.
Oh dear God! Let's see. That one aspect could be. It's such a broad topic because I mean, let me see if I can try and piece together what I was curious about with just that.
Yeah, Tumblr does not have an outbox or a scent box.
Oh, I know. It's frustrating. Fuck. I mean, that word wasn't in there. You didn't hear it. but yeah, I mean, there's this idea of young folks, I guess. We probably talked about this before, but one of the things that always gets my goat when you're dealing with discussions among pagan, you know, people. Particularly if you're trying to discuss or involve, you know, the mainstream monotheistic religions, there tends to be this habit among the young where they get kind of fundamentalist, based on just like one or two books. And, you know, they get very hostile, like, you know, if you don't believe as I believe, then you are obviously, you know, faulty. You know, your knowledge is limited because I am right because of this one book or two books that I've read.
Yeah.
But I find that very common among a lot of the spiritual people that I find on Tumblr as well. Just because spirituality is such a broad base on Tumblr, and there do tend to become cliques that form where a certain ideology is right or true, and you know they'll preach about love and compassion and all this kind of stuff, but what ends up happening is that it becomes a very specifically applied, you know, love or compassion. You know, it's not the universal kind that, you know, is being talked about. it's kind of the selective, you know, I love
all animals.
Friends.
All animals are equal. Some are more equal than others.
Precisely. Yeah, exactly. And
yeah, and that's, I think that a lot of that is, can go straight to some of the concepts that when Wicca and when the paganism movement really started in the mid-60s, of trying to separate it out from the mainstream religions, a concept was floated that we had to make it special, and we had to make people see themselves as special while they were practicing this. And that was good to a point, but the concept itself took over, and it became very much more of a, I am so special because I am, you know, meditating and doing transcendental changes to myself through the meditation. And that's great, but the part that was dropped from all of that is that, and you are just as special because you are doing what you feel is necessary. Now, Buddhism, from what I understand, teaches that. It teaches that the path that you have is right for you, and what you do along that path is special and correct. And they also teach along with that, but it is only right for you. It is not right for other people. You have no right to force it on somebody else. And that concept kind of got discarded somewhere along the line in there.
Well, I wonder if it isn't kind of the, quote, American-style Buddhism that, you know, cherry-picks the aspects that it wants to sort of promote. And because there is that kind of idea of getting ahead, you know, keeping up with the Joneses or, you know, whatever, you know, it kind of infiltrated the spiritual practices so that there's that tendency. I mean, I see it in Canada too, but, you know, that tendency to kind of esteem yourself above others because you're walking a particular path that happens to be faddish or popular, you know, for the time being kind of thing. And it's like, well, great, that's awesome for you. However,
unfortunately, that concept has also been around for centuries. I mean, look at the mystical lodges.
That's very true.
You know, they did the same thing, fraternal orders. It's not American, it's not Canadian, it's Western society.
Yeah, I suppose that's very true.
Especially when you have an adversarial relationship with everything around you. I mean, most of, I hate to denigrate another religion, but the way things have been interpreted in Christianity is that people are people, and God has chosen people to be his people. And then you have the rest of the world. And God has put us on this planet to rule everything. Whereas with most of the Eastern religions that I see, it's, we are part of all. We are not separate from it. We are an aspect of it. We have to take care of everything because everything takes care of us as well. We're one cog in the entire great machine that is life on this planet.
Well, yeah, for certain. And I think the way that animistic religions emerge is precisely in that way. I mean, Christopher Hughes, the author, did a talk at a pagan gathering in the UK last summer. And he was talking about the fact that a lot of those, you know, Eastern religions and, you know, kind of Middle Eastern religions are ones where they're, you know, they emerge out of basic, like, survival conditions where, you know, they're heavily dependent on things like rain and sun and, you know, just like there's this sky orientation because of the fact that there's like desolate landscape surrounding, so that they have only to look up and, you know, I guess from that emerges the sense that there are chosen people, because other people are, you know, starving or, you know, dying out because of, you know, the conditions that they're all living in. Whereas animistic religions, particularly sort of the Western pagan religions and belief systems, I guess, because I don't really class like Greek polytheism as a specific religion in the classical world. But those kind of emerged from the ground up because they, you know, they just were. I mean, like, life sprang from the ground, so that's how the religions formed. And I think what happens with that is that you get those, I kind of want to playfully call them sky watchers, who try to build a sense of superiority in their religion based on the fact that, you know, they're trying to transcend the world that is so difficult for them to live in. Whereas the sort of Western pagan religions are in a sense life-affirming, and they don't really feel a need to transcend the body. They simply exist and enjoy it.
I think when I think about the overall scope of religions in the world as it is, and believe me, I'm not an expert in any stretch of the imagination on all religions, but I know enough of the different philosophies that I think what the overreaching goal is, there's two of them, it really seems to be. One is a separation of self from everyone else and a superiority complex, and then there's the cooperation complex that is the other half of it. And it seems like what we're trying to evolve to in a spiritual sense as a group, the entire human race, is an incorporation amongst each other, where you are my brother and I may not know you from anybody, but because you are human, because you are breathing the same atmosphere I am, I have a need to help you and you have a need to help me get better. That kind of cooperation, whereas the other side of the coin, most of the current religions are trying to separate that so that it's each individual who is on their own, you know, taking everything from everyone else. And it really seems like that is the whole dichotomy between good versus evil. And it's not really good versus evil. It's selfishness versus selflessness.
That's interesting, because I've actually used that exact kind of explanation when I was talking with entirely different people. Like, there's no such thing as good and evil. There is selfish motivation and benefit to the group.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, the idea that, you know, but I think what happens here is that you've got this sort of mindset that good is whatever serves the self first. And I think that's where a lot of the problems come in a lot of these traditions that you see nowadays, where you've got those people that become elitist, you know, self-righteous, kind of fundamentalist even, mm-hmm. is that they've somehow warped the idea that good is whatever's best for me, as opposed to good in the sense of benefiting, you know, a broader population kind of thing.
Well, it's been turned on its ear because good, as you said, is of benefit to self, and not good, which by definition is evil, is what does not benefit the self but benefits everyone else. And what's disturbing is that this has been sold to pretty much all of society as what good and evil are. And what is actually true is that the opposites are true. Good is what benefits the group, and evil is what benefits only the self. And there's nothing wrong with being selfish about some things. I mean, you have to have goods and money. Well, let's go back to a primitive type of culture. You have to have the ability to get food to eat in order to help somebody else. So being selfish about growing the food crops for you to eat is not a bad thing, okay? Although seen as you are growing these for your own benefit, by the definitions that we've laid out, it could be seen as evil, okay? But in order to help others long term, you have to take care of your own self. You have to be focused on you. You have to get your basic needs provided for first, and then you can focus on taking care of others, okay?
And I think that's sort of what you end up with as far as a lot of overall morality is. I mean, people realize that, you know, they do have to provide a certain level of, you know, survivability for themselves in order to help others. But again, there's that kind of pressure to maintain that selfishness instead of to expand it into, you know, community and, you know, service to other people. Because I think that, like, okay, the quote evil idea of growing a garden for yourself, you know, just to meet your basic needs isn't a bad thing. It's when you have excess and you basically hoard it to the point where that food rots.
Right.
Whereas, you know, it could have benefited other people. You could have bartered it for other goods or whatever, you know, or provided for someone who wasn't having such a great crop that year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of thing translated into sort of spirituality is, I mean, there's a certain need for individual pursuit and practice of spirituality. But when you get to the point where you're kind of idealizing things like love and compassion, and you're talking, you know, all the time about the ideas of them without putting them into the practice, then you're creating what is essentially a selfish and evil version of the ideal that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what happens nowadays is that people, they want to esteem themselves as loving and compassionate without actually putting it into practice.
Yeah. And yeah, there's nothing wrong with loving yourself. I mean, because like we've been saying, you have to be able to take care of yourself in order to help others. I mean, that's just basic. One flows from the other. But it's when it's taken to excess that it starts becoming a hindrance more than help. And that's where I think things really break down, is that it is taken to an extreme, and it's taken to a ridiculous extreme. Because you're right, where you grow enough food to take care of your own needs and then hoard it so that it rots, you know, it's of no use to anybody at that point. You know, and that does become evil acting, even if it's not evil seeming.
Yeah, and
go ahead.
Sorry, I was just thinking that when morality is taken to such basic ideas. I mean, it becomes fairly obvious. It's when I think you move into a more complex society where, in our case, I mean, you know, you'll have that poet, I want to say it was John Donne, but somebody wrote, you know, no man is an island unto itself. Okay. And, you know, I think there's an understanding that it's good to contribute to the whole, and that if you're trying to stand alone, it can be destructive to the potential whole, to the good of the group. Whereas I think, shit, I totally lost my train of thought. I had it all beautifully planned out too. You know how we are. You guys
yes.
all know how we are. We have brilliant thoughts, then they, you know,
and
derail, and it's like, oh shit.
Okay,
you also
the
know
poem
me,
is
swear.
Called. The poem is called No Man is an Island. It is by John Donne. No man is an island entire of itself. Each is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. If a clod be washed away by the sea, Europe is the less, as well as if a promontory were, as well as if a manor were of thine own or of thine friends were. Each man's death diminishes me, for I am involved in mankind. Therefore, send not to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee.
And I think a lot of people are familiar with that last line of the poem as well, you know.
Yeah.
Ask
the
not
part
for
that
whom
I
the
always
bell.
Focus on the part that I always focus on with this poem is each man's death diminishes me.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, if you're truly part of a loving community, then that in itself should be a realistic kind of sense that you get. Like, if you're part of a deep spiritual community that's very bonded, and, you know, one person goes through some really deeply traumatic incident, it only stands to reason that because of your close bond that you feel their suffering as well, you know, that,
mm-hmm.
that you want to be there and help them with it. Because somehow their suffering becomes your suffering. And actually, you know, I really enjoyed that poem, and I was only reading it a couple of weeks ago, so it's kind of interesting that it came up. But yeah,
well,
I mean,
you brought it up.
It's true. I wasn't intending to have the whole thing read, but that's okay.
No, it's fine. It's relevant.
Let's bring random poetry up too.
Somehow.
It probably does. If one card is lost, the deck is reduced, or is
there
left.
You go. See, that's a perfect there you go. It relates. Everything relates to tarot.
You know how we are, folks. You know, if you guys want to call in for a reading tonight, the number is 646-564-9966. We are right here. You know, if you feel like you want a reading, we have about 40 minutes left of the show.
Yes,
if you have some ideas that you want to discuss, it would be a great time to call in.
Or even ideas for when we go to Magic Monday. I mean, we've got the theme of the first show picked out. We could probably BS our way through the next two, but we don't really have any plans on what we're going to talk about, when we're going to talk about it. It's probably going to be things like the segues here, where we're just talking about random stuff that happened to relate to the overall topic at hand.
Exactly. And I think, I'm wondering if I have my little calendar schedule thingy here, because that is where I wrote all my topics. No, I don't have it handy. Crap. But yeah, I mean, once we start up Magic Monday, folks, I mean, it's going to be great to hear from you folks. You know, if you've got topics that you want to hear us discuss or that you want to interject your own ideas about, that's going to be a great opportunity for you folks to, you know, pipe in and offer your thoughts. Obviously, you can message us on Tumblr, email us, whatever way you feel like. as well, if you prefer not to call on air. Although, don't be shy. We won't bite hard.
Unless you like that, and then you need to let me know, because I've got a convention that I'm going to be giving a whip demonstration at here not too long from now.
And Joy and I discussed this, I think, while we were waiting for some music to play at one point, and it was like, okay, whips are really cool. So, yeah,
we were. That was the night that the show crashed.
It was, wasn't it? Oh, it was.
It was
like you and me just sitting there on Skype after the show crashed, and then we're like, okay.
And we're just chatting away.
We were segueing without you people. That's just how it was.
And it was very, very interesting. But anyway, as a matter of fact, I've been kicking around the idea of coming up with a Magic Mondays domain, just purchasing the domain name and making it a subdomain off of my web hosting and setting up a whole page where it's our contact information, where it's the Blog Talk Radio being streamed to, where it's chat room, where we can, you know, talk about ideas and schedules and things like that. So we don't have a Skype presence and a Facebook presence and a Tumblr presence, and it's all unified in one place where you can come and look at everything.
I like
that. Yeah, it's something that's been needing to be done for a little while, not only with Tarot Talk, but also with, you know, anything else like that. But in order to do this, guys, listen to me. We really need your participation. We need you guys. I'm going to sound like a PBS ad at this point. We don't need your money, although that would be nice. But we need you to participate with us, because I'm willing to do this. I'm willing to talk as long as you guys want to hear me, every night if you would like to. But I do need feedback from you, what you would like to hear, ideas that you have for the shows, topics you would like discussed. And if I don't know about it, I bet you Brian does. And if neither of us know about it, we'll say so. And you know what? We can research. The Internet is free.
And we can always bring people onto the show who know something that, you know, we don't. I mean, This is the way of the world, you know. But again, folks, we do need to have some interaction. I mean, we know the audience is out there. We know there's people listening to the show.
Download 500 the episodes 500 times in, you know, 1 week. I think Tarot Talk number one is up to, what, 2,500 downloads or something?
Probably somewhere around there.
Yeah, I mean.
But seriously, folks.
You know, and we'll archive the old shows there. I've got all the Tarot Talks saved on my hard drive. And, you know, I can upload them there. I've been meaning to do that anyway, so that you can download them and listen to them later. But it helps us when we have questions, when we're actually teaching a class rather than talking about random things, because then we don't get distracted. We stay on topic. We actually find relevant things, and like the tandem reading that we did tonight, your thoughts may spark another thought in us.
Mm-hmm. And, you know? I mean, again, like, we may be able to bring up personal experiences that if you don't interact and mention something that, you know, we can somehow tie to what we're talking about, we may not think to bring up. It happens when you present workshops and classes and stuff that, you know, you may not think like someone who doesn't know what you already know. You know, like, you may not, like, in our cases, we may talk about all kinds of things relating to a particular topic, but there may be something more on a basic level that you want to know about that we won't even think to bring up because we're not you. Like, we're not thinking like someone who doesn't already know this.
And also, to go along with that, your questions help us because I've got 21 years experience doing this. Brian has something along the lines of 15. Between us, we are a middle-aged person in experience with metaphysics. So a basic concept that both of us know that we have, you know, we assume that the other knows and the other acknowledges, yes, that they know it, we'll never bring up in our discussion unless you ask a question of, well, why do you use these tarot cards? Where did they come from? You know, and then we'll have to go back and we'll have to explain that concept. That will help clarify it in our mind, but it will also give more information to you because you don't have that experience that we do. We're going to assume, unless we get questions, that you guys understand everything we're saying. And, you know,
and
so,
when we start Magic Monday, there will be topics we probably touch on that are going to get into some crazy level of esoterica, and Joy and I are going to be assuming that you guys are keeping up. We won't be thinking, you know, that at a very beginner level.
We have to go back and give you Paganism 101, you know.
We could, but
everybody does Paganism 101. Magic Mondays is about theory, okay? Like I said, when you have every single group out there, they give you the ritual. They give you the steps to do A, B, C, and D to get result K, okay? But they never tell you what steps A, B, C, and D actually relate to. They say, oh, light this piece of incense, okay? Why do we light this piece of incense? Well, because the ritual says to light the incense. They don't understand that the incense is a scent. Scents are powerful memory triggers for specific mental attitudes. It takes you out of the world of the mundane, because if this is a scent, if this sandalwood is the only time you smell it is during a ritual, when you are feeling centered and calm and grounded and connected with everything, whenever you smell it, you're going to automatically drop into that state. It's going to cause an altered state of consciousness in you. If the only time you use that is during a ritual, and that is the kind of feeling that you're wanting to invoke, that's going to happen automatically every time. But they're just going to say, light this incense, and you're not going to know why. You're not going to know the reason behind it. And the reason is because that scent will drop you into an altered state of consciousness without effort, because that's what it's designed to do.
And if you look at different books on magic and ritual and, you know, various other disciplines, I mean, you're going to find recommendations for herbs to burn or particular instances that, you know, a ritual calls for. And each of those is meant to evoke a particular feeling for you, a particular scent experience. There are certain rituals that, you know, they want to create a darker, more chthonic, a heavier feel. And they'll usually call for something like dragon's blood, which an absolutely awesome incense on its own, but it does have a particular feel to it that, you know, if you're trying to do like a cheery, I don't know, Ostara ritual, dragon's blood is a little too rich for that.
Same thing with frankincense and myrrh and a lot of church blends like that.
Yeah, for sure, definitely. I mean, those are all great incenses on their own, but each of them has a very particular feel to it. So sandalwood is a wonderful basic incense that you can layer on top with other scents, and it usually isn't overpowered or just, you know, or completely eliminated that way.
I wear it as a perfume. I've got some sandalwood oil that I put on occasionally when I'm going out to work. But, see, that's what Magic Monday is going to be about. It's going to be about the discussion of the whys and wherefores, the theory behind the ritual. You can buy 100 books. I could walk down to Borders right now and probably come back with a stack of 50 different books on paganism and ritual that will tell you that you're supposed to do this, that, and the other, but not give you the theory behind it. Magic Mondays is going to be that theory, that stuff that you should have been trained on once you got to the first degree, not the outer circle stuff. The outer circle stuff is the books. the theory once you get into the group is what we're going to be talking about. And, you know, we're not going to be giving away any initiated secrets because obviously we've either promised that we're not going to or we don't know them because we're not initiates. But we're going to be talking about the common stuff that is for – this is the Paganism 301 course that everybody begs for. And then when it's actually put out there in a book, doesn't sell.
Yeah, for sure, because it's just – it is just rather uninteresting to read it. But, I mean, going on to, like, even – I mean, we could talk for an hour about scent. Specifically, I mean, if you look into aromatherapy,
I stopped talking.
True. I mean, if you look into
sorry,
this is a horrible habit of ours. Is that, you know, there are those weird topics that we can, you know, it they just don't sound like something you could go on and on with. But Joy and I managed to do that really well.
We do it every week.
This is true, and I mean, scent is something that. You know, if you look into aromatherapy, you know, certain scents evoke certain responses. And that's the same thing with incense in a ritual. So, you know, if you've... Okay, personally, I like Nag Champa, but that to me is kind of a toking kind of a incense that isn't for ritual use because... It evokes a particular emotional response, you know, and that's, it's great with reggae or, you know, like some Led Zeppelin or something, but if you want to do a ritual, using Nag Champa is going to create the wrong feeling, unless you're trying to ritualize like Salvia Divinorum or something like that, you know, it's an interesting thing, and if you're trying to get into paganism or spiritual practices of any particular kind, you know, experiment with different incenses, see what they do to you. You know, try different oils. Mix your own. I mean, I particularly use patchouli soap. And I only use it when I'm, you know, not, you know, preparing for work. I use it as a spiritual... cleansing soap.
Mm-hmm.
And, the
radiant,
you know...
The radiant bath.
Exactly. I mean, it's something that I particularly enjoy. Someone else may enjoy lavender or something. Personally, that makes me gag, but that's beside the point. That's me, right? So, I mean, scent is going to be something that, I don't know, if we talk about it, we could go on forever and ever.
Probably. And I'm not that knowledgeable about it. I have a problem with my sense of smell and taste are really, really diminished because of a fight that I got in when I was little and got my nose knocked out of joint, literally. Not broken, just knocked out of place. And it's caused a lot of scarring inside the sinuses, which is where most of the smell receptors are. So scent is not a huge factor in my practice. In fact, most of the rituals I go into, the only reason that I have incense burning is because of the air element being brought into the ritual, and that's it, because the scent is not that important to me. You know, same with tasting stuff. There's quite a number of things that I can't taste, whereas, you know, other people are talking about, oh, this is so damn salty, I can't stand it. And I'm like, it is? It tastes really bland to me. I need more salt. And they're looking at me like I'm, you know, I've got this pile of white stuff on top of it. And they're like, what the heck is that? Oh, it's salt. It's not salty enough? No, it's not. I can barely taste it. So, anyway, that doesn't have anything to do with anything.
It's... Everything has something to do with tarot.
Yes.
The end of tarot talk, everything related.
So, all right, next week we will be doing probably a huge recap on all the cards. Now, don't think that you can cheat and just listen to the last episode and get all the knowledge. because you're not going to be able to. This is going to be going through the cards one at a time, major arcana all the way through all the pip cards, and giving an overview of the card. Probably it's just going to be the mnemonic show, where I sort out my tarot deck, I draw them one at a time, and give you the mnemonic that I use for that card. For instance, the Fool will be the first card drawn, and I use that as the Innocent. That's what I call
it. The first phrase that comes to mind for me, too.
And that's, you know, how you get a good encapsulated snapshot of the Fool as a whole, and that is, you know, what I use when I first see it. That's the first thing that pops to mind, and that's how I start interpreting it, because that's my association with it. And we'll just go through all 78 cards at that point, and I'll give you that mnemonic or that mnemonic phrase. And you can write it down or not. You know, I don't really care. But that's a good starting place for, you know, interpreting the cards. But there's a lot of depth to all of them, so you are going to have to go back and listen to previous episodes if you haven't. Brian stated mentioned that he was going to go in and probably edit the previous tarot talks so that they had a description of what cards are being described in there, and you probably wouldn't be doing good to put the segue stuff in there. So,
maybe we could just sort of, I might just sort of give a couple of keywords about the segues, just in case, you know, people are like, I wonder what Joy and Brian think about goldfish, you know. So they could actually scroll through the list and kind of go, oh, here's the night they talked about goldfish. Let's find out. You know, and
oh,
that
they're talking about the crackers, not the animal. Damn.
Hey, those are good crackers. If you haven't tried them, you're missing out.
Anyway. But
they're
required
required eating for Darrow Talk.
So, okay, those are the upcoming plans. If you want to join in with us on those, please get in touch with us. Tumblr, email, wide-worlds-joy@tumblr.com, joy.a.philip@gmail.com, and Brian...
cosmic-rebirth.tumblr.com or the show's blog woodwose-radio.tumblr.com, my email woodwose.radio@yahoo.ca.
Yes, send us your ideas, send us thoughts, send us things that you would like to hear about. If you feel squirrely and have a couple of extra dollars to throw at us to defray some of the costs that the hosting's going to cost, and that the subscription here at Blog Rose costs, we wouldn't object to it. In fact, if you start donating, we'll mention your name on the show and let y'all, you know, get a little publicity or something.
For sure. And if you've got like an Etsy store and you want to donate something for giveaways or whatever, get in touch with us, so that we can, you know, make arrangements. We'll probably just have, you know, a drawing based on a question or something that people send their name and address and whatnot in with their answer, and, you know, do a random draw for whatever the item, and then just pass on the mailing address to whoever it is that's sending it, so it's not like changing hands 15 times before it gets to you.
Right.
I mean, we want to make Magic Monday more interactive than Tarot Talk has been. I mean, Tarot Talk has been fun, but with the lack of human interaction, you know, there's only so much that Joy and I have been able to do with that, you know. And I know you guys love our banter because we love our banter. Hopefully Magic Monday's not going to end up being filled with a lot of the same, because we'll have topics to discuss. We might have nights where we just go, okay, roundtable discussion on, you know, and then we'll bring in some people, you know, to bring in different perspectives about, I don't know, goldfish or whatever, you know, like, there's so much.
No, I know enough people in the community.
Well, exactly. So I've got, you know, Facebook contacts with authors and, you know, all kinds of people. Like, I was going to bring in a guy to talk about veganism, you know, for one show at one point. You know, Joy and I both actually connected through Lupa, who's an author.
She's an awesome lady.
And, yeah, I mean...
There was one point where I was talking on a discussion board, and I mentioned that, you know, I've met and sat down and talked and exchanged personal emails with Ray Buckland. And, you know, and I'm like, and, you know, that's normal. And everybody was like, you know Ray Buckland? Oh, my God. And it's like, he's the founder of my tradition of Wicca. Of course I know him. I've talked to him. We've discussed theology and talked about the direction of where Sayaks Wicca is going to go and what we want to do with it. And, you know, they're like, oh, my goodness, you're wonderful. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, and the way I see him, Ray Buckland's pretty down to earth. I mean, once he kind of let go of that, that ancient lineage thing that he presented in that video that he did. Once he let go of that, you know, his tradition seems to have, you know, moved forward and developed, as far as I understand. Because, I mean, I think that was a detail. Actually, it was interesting. I was listening to a couple of episodes of Druidcast, great podcast, folks, run by Obod. But they had John Michael Greer, who's an author, of many, many occult books, and books about environmental issues and druidism, all kinds of stuff. If you don't know him and, you know, the name sounds interesting, look him up on Amazon or whatever and see what, you know, books come up, because he's got a crazy array of them. And author Philip Cargom. And they were talking about the difference between validity and authenticity of Druidism and other spiritual practices. Great discussion. Episodes 68 and 69, I think, is where they were discussing it. You know, there's a lot of topics that are covered in other podcasts that we're going to cover. You know, just make yourself open to looking into things. Mm-hmm. Again, my train of thought was lost. It's embarrassing. But yeah, folks, I mean, if you want to discover a topic, if you want to
hear about it or know some more or add something to the discussion or whatever. I mean,
yeah.
When Brian first came to me and he posted on Tumblr that he was looking for somebody to do a tarot program with, that any tarot readers needed to get in touch with them. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm a tarot reader and I'm pretty good at it. I sent him, you know, an email or a note on there, and he was like, oh, you're the only one that's ever responded on this. And I'm like, really? Wow. Because there's like 6 blogs that I follow on Tumblr that talk about tarot and talk about spiritualism. And I'm like, I'm the only one that responded? I tell you, when I first heard about the concept, it was like, okay, well, we're going to have a tarot podcast. Cool. That's pretty neat. And we can talk about it. And all right, that's going to fill up maybe 13, 14 episodes. And I'll tell you honestly, by about the 4th episode, I was hooked. This is the highlight of my week. is getting on here for these 2 hours, talking to you guys, talking with Brian, discussing the tarot, discussing esoterica, discussing spiritualism in general, and going over, you know, things of this nature. And I was hoping that we could turn this, you know, with you know, several weeks of play into something along the lines of car talk on NPR, where there's people that call in with questions and people that talk to us and, you know, have a reading done. And we can talk about things like that and, you know, have a good time for the 2 hours that we're together. It happened one Saturday. We just exploded. We had, what, five people?
That was crazy.
That was insane. And I think it was probably because it was on Saturday.
Yeah. We were both pretty certain that's what it was. It just happened to be that one weird night because of the crash. And we, you know, we picked up where we left off the Saturday right after that.
And there was somebody that called in very early in the show, I think like 20 seconds after we started, and waited on the phone for an hour and 20 minutes before we finally got around to doing her reading.
Yeah.
It was insane.
Sure.
You know, and that's what I was hoping it would be. It didn't turn out to be that. Hopefully Magic Mondays can be. I know that Brian tried this idea before, but he was doing it by himself.
Yeah.
Hopefully with a co-host, there'll be enough back and forth that it'll keep going.
Well, and I think that was the big difficulty that I was having, was the fact that being a solitary, trying to cover a different topic every week, or every 2 weeks when I first started, there was a lot of challenge because I was the only one who was able to, you know, look into things and kind of be the, quote, expert on the topic, you know, for the show, because every time I would arrange guests, I would have cancellations all of a sudden, or, you know, there were times when I had arranged someone and they weren't available as long as, you know, originally planned, et cetera, et cetera. So it became kind of challenging for me to fill time. Hopefully Magic Monday is going to be something that, you know, Joy and I can, like,
do for the next,
you know, run
years
with. Oh, that would be great. And if it became, like, a legitimate kind of income, that would be wild.
That would be fantastic. Plus, also realize, I know that we're going to be competing against everybody on YouTube and all the other pagan podcasts, but hopefully they're not going to have the combination of personalities that we have. They're not going to have the breadth of experience, and they're going to be doing what Brian was doing, a solitary host trying to talk for an hour on a subject they may not know enough about, but hopefully with, you know, two people, we'll be able to avoid all of that. And, you know, even if we can't, heck, we could just read my book reviews, because I've got like 100 of them up on various books that I've encountered or gotten sent or whatever over time, and we can talk about those. As a matter of fact, I've now got five topics that we could possibly talk about. Okay, next week, like I said, the review of the tarot with mnemonics, the first Magic Monday, we're going to be talking about your magic book. Okay, Wiccans call it their Book of Shadows. Ceremonial magicians call it their grimoire. Others call it their Book of Mirrors. Some call it their Book of Reflections. It's even a metaphysical journal. But just about every single metaphysical practitioner of any kind has a reference library and a book of personal notes that and insights that they've come to. We're going to talk about that on the first Magic Monday for 2 hours. So get ready. It's going to be interesting.
It's true. It should be really wild. You know, if you're the type of person who has gone to those links where you built one of those, like, charmed or practical magic style, you know, books of shadows where you, you know, got the big ancient leather-bound tome, you know, pages covered in herbs and other kinds of stuff. we would love to hear about that. You know, we'd love to hear about the things that you piece together, you know, call in with your own ideas, with your own thoughts about blessing, dedicating the book, designing it, things you included. If you want to share, I don't know, a particular invocation that you wrote, give us a call. You know, when Magic Monday starts, when we talk about that book of rituals, you know, interact with us. Bring your experience to the show so that we can, you know, just gawp and be amazed by the things that we've never thought to do.
Oh, yeah, because believe us, we haven't seen it all. We haven't even seen most of it. We've seen a lot. We've seen the good, the bad, the evil, the ugly amongst the pagan community for a long time. As a matter of fact, Mary and myself both got driven out of one community and were really sour on physical communities in paganism for a long, long time because of it. And that was, you know, a reflection on that community. But I've gotten back to a point where while I'm not comfortable letting my mundane life into my spiritual life online, I'm, you know, everywhere. And I talk to a lot of people. We've dealt with all the different personality types in the various metaphysical communities online. I know that, you know, I've got a website called the Warriors, and they've got different types of people that are online, and every single one of those types of people have been in the pagan community online, and we've dealt with them. So, yeah, we've got – I don't even know what the heck my point was here.
The point is –
And once again, the thought train just derails.
It will do that, and it's going to happen a lot on Magic Mondays as well. But that's where you guys can come in. You know, you call us when there's something that we're rambling on about and we lose track of what we wanted to talk about. If you call in with a question so that we clarify a particular aspect that we discussed, then that's going to help us. It's going to help you. It's going to improve the show.
Definitely.
I mean, there's a lot of potential with Magic Monday and, you know, you guys. I mean, if you know someone, if you've got a personal connection to, I don't know, someone who's experienced in something that we're going to be talking about, you know, hook us up. You know, like, we want to get to know these people and have them on the show. And, you know, maybe if you're curious or you're fairly knowledgeable about something and you want to join in on a round table, by all means, you know, let us know.
I have no problem doing a round table discussion with three or four different people on here. The one qualifier that I would ask for is if you're going to call in and you're going to talk authoritatively about something, actually know the subject matter. I'm not going to ask for, you know, certificates and initiations and things like that because, you know, we're not going to be focused on that. But the idea behind this is to give people good information on the various topics. So if you're going to call in and you are going to try to be an authority on something, actually be an authority on it rather than somebody that just knows of it.
Yeah, for sure. And if we come to a show where we discuss something like the life force or some, you know, concept like that where there's different traditions have different perspectives on it, you're not particularly a Wiccan or a Druid or anything like that, but you have a perspective from, say, Ayurveda or, I don't know, yoga. Oh, exactly. If you've got some perspective on a topic that we're covering that isn't represented between the two of us, by all means, let us know, because we may want to have you on there to join us for another, a third perspective on the topic, because it will definitely enhance that topic for us, but it will blow the minds of some of the newbie pagans out there who want to learn something to enhance their own knowledge.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we know for a fact that, you know, paganism is not Wicca. Wicca is part of paganism, but, you know, all the books out there, all the resources out there, all the Pagan 101 websites that give the fluff bunny information try to pass all paganism off as Wicca. I mean, one of the most persistent myths that just make me cringe every time I read it, and this is cringe as a Wiccan, is when I see a book on paganism saying that the main rule is anet harm none, do as you will. At that point, I want to throw the book as far as I can, pull down a solar flare and just burn it to cinders and every single other copy. So we know that this is not the sum total of paganism. You may know that it's not the sum total of paganism, but somebody just tuning in who doesn't know, who is just getting into paganism, who is just trying to find their path, may not realize that. So we can only represent the groups that we're part of. I'm an initiated druid. I'm a priest, high priestess in Wicca. I am a witch. Mary is a kitchen witch. Brian is a druid. You're also, what else?
I'm a member of ADF and Obod. I've been Wiccan. I've been, I've looked into Alcitru. You know, I've got a broad base, you know, shamanism, things like that.
Yeah, you know, I've done some shamanism stuff. We know people that are shamans and know people that are in OBOD and ADF. But that's, you know, there's so many more areas out there that we don't know anything about. I know of Zoroastrianism. I know a little bit about it. I know that it's very dichotomous. I know that a lot of the concepts in Zoroastrianism wound up in the religions of the book, which is Judaism and Christianity and Islam. But I don't know enough about it to say this is what they believe. So if you are initiated Zoroastrianism, please get in touch with us. We'd love to hear your thoughts and opinions. If you're Christian, we'd love to talk to you, too. If you're Islamic, hey, we could do that, too. We could make it a pan-religious show. We're going to try not to make it, you know, one religion all the time. We're going to try to make it as holistic as possible, and we're going to try to give theory rather than just rote practice.
Definitely.
So according to my clock, we've got about a minute left.
Just shy of 40 seconds.
All right.
But yeah, I mean,
that's
folks,
it.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you again for joining us tonight. Join us again next week for the last episode of Tarot Talk. And then the following Monday, we are going to begin our brand new show, Magic Monday.
Have fun, everyone.
Good night, everyone.